Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Charlotte Gallagher, and in the early hours of Friday, the 3rd of April, these are our main stories. There are now more than a million confirmed cases of coronavirus around the world, and at least 50,000 people have died. Unemployment claims in the US more than double in a week, and NATO increases efforts to help member states fight the virus. Also in this podcast.
This is a special oil child of God that is able to protect God's people right now from every manner of plague.
The religious leader selling $100 oil he claims can cure COVID-19. We begin this podcast with a chilling milestone in the battle that's gripped the world. Just a few months after its first appearance in the Chinese city of Wuhan, coronavirus has infected more than a million people. The new benchmark was confirmed by Johns Hopkins University in the US, which has been tracking the spread of the virus. It says more than 51,000 people have died, but more than 200,000 have recovered. As things stand, the US accounts for the most cases, Italy the highest death toll. The BBC's Gareth Barlow told me more.
The warning had been that these figures would be reached and reached within a fairly short period of time. And that's because obviously viruses replicate within people. That's their way of surviving and spreading. Then, of course, they spread between people. So we were expecting this to happen. And of course, more and more countries are testing. So it was inevitable that we would get more confirmed cases. But that's the key word there, confirmed. We know that the true figure of cases and of deaths globally will be higher than the figures that Johns Hopkins University in the United States has recorded. But what's interesting, I think, and what's really notable, is it took 1.5 months after the virus first being identified as this new strain of a coronavirus for us to reach 100,000 confirmed cases. It's doubled in the pace of a week. And like you say, now a quarter of those confirmed cases are in the United States. Half of them are in Europe, and that epicentre of the pandemic and of the outbreak shifting from China across to Europe and now across to the United States. The real concern is, will there now be a second wave in Asia? So at the moment, as you say, we know at least a million confirmed cases, at least 51,000 plus deaths. What we don't know is what those two final figures will eventually be.
That was Gareth Barlow. Several governments have been criticised for their lack of testing facilities. Britain today addressed the issue with a new plan to test 100,000 people a day by the end of the month. Other countries have followed the World Health Organization mantra, test, 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 from the start. Let's hear what they've been doing.
I'm Mike Sanders, Europe Regional Editor. Disparities in coronavirus testing threaten to break the political consensus in several European states. Germany is far and away the leader in using tests to check who's safe to go back into the workforce. German laboratories are conducting more than 50,000 antigen tests a day from samples collected in hospitals, doctors' practices and drive-in stations. At that rate, Germany takes about 3 days to match Britain's entire testing effort. The British government has blamed a lack of reagents, but chemical industry bosses have said they'll make whatever is needed. Spain had to ditch thousands of unreliable Chinese test kits after the Chinese embassy in Madrid warned that they were from an unapproved supplier. France was initially unconvinced about the value of testing, but has changed tack. It hopes to conduct 30,000 tests a day by next week.
I'm Michael Bristow, Asia-Pacific editor. This region has countries that have done a lot of testing and some that have done very little. South Korea falls into the former category. It's carried out 400,000 tests. This has been credited with keeping infection rates relatively low. Dozens of people died in South Korea from Middle East respiratory syndrome 5 years ago, which taught health officials to be prepared for the next virus. So when the coronavirus outbreak began in China, Seoul quickly developed a test and then mass-produced it. Indonesia is on the other end of the scale. It's the world's fourth most populous country with more than 260 million people. But one report said it had carried out just 7,000 tests. The number of confirmed cases of the virus is relatively low, But many believe that's because infected people are going undetected. The governor of a province on the island of Java called for a rapid increase in the number of tests. That's what the Indonesian president asked for 2 weeks ago.
That was Michael Bristow and Mike Sanders. In the United States, measures to slow the spread of coronavirus mean that 90% of the population are now under at least some restrictions. And today, the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, urged everyone who ventures outside to cover their face. But the measures do have consequences for the economy. More than 6.5 million people have filed for unemployment benefit, an unprecedented number. Speaking at the White House, President Trump insisted his government would do everything in its power to support small businesses.
I want to remind small business owners across America that the Paycheck Protection Program is launching tomorrow. Nearly $350 billion in loans will be available to small businesses, including sole proprietors. These loans are up to 100% forgivable as long as employers keep paying their workers. Got to take care of your workers.
Our correspondent Gary O'Donoghue in Washington told us more about the spike in unemployment figures.
Well, you think back just a few months, we had unemployment here of under 4%. I mean, it was historically low levels of unemployment here in the States at that time. The growth wasn't quite as strong as they'd hoped, but the economy was growing quarter on quarter. And here we are because of the virus. As John was saying, 2 weeks, 10 million people out of work claiming unemployment insurance. Now, it's an extraordinary time. It's pretty arguable, and I think it's probably fair to argue that this is obviously not about the underlying economy. This is about an extraordinary once-in-a-century event. The question, of course, is that will the underlying economy be able to return as quickly as it's disappeared? Because of the damage that's being done to those businesses while they're not operating properly. And that's why we've heard today in the briefing a very strong message from Donald Trump himself and his Treasury Secretary that the loans to those small businesses, people employing less than 500 people at $350 billion in the rescue package, those will be available from tomorrow. And also they're promising that these cash payments to individuals will at least start going out, as they put it, in the next couple of weeks or so. $1,200 for individuals earning under $75,000, $500 for each child they have too.
That was Gary O'Donoghue. Well, we received this message from a woman in the US who this week has had to file for unemployment for the first time in her life.
My name is Sally Osborne. I live in a small town in West Texas. I filed for unemployment for the first time Tuesday morning. I'm a property manager, I'm a bookkeeper, and I'm a photographer. My photography is just done for now. My bookkeeping has been cut in half. And for the first time in my life, I'm 67 years old, I filed for unemployment. So now I have a resume out there for shopping center cleaning. But anyway, I just felt wrong for doing this. But I just want people to know that it's okay to file for unemployment right now and that we will all get through this together.
The international military alliance NATO is set to step up its efforts to help member states tackle COVID-19. The alliance's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said NATO was created to deal with crises so we can help. Here's our defence and diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus.
Turkey and the Czech Republic have already moved vital medical equipment to Spain and Italy. Romania has used NATO aircraft to bring supplies from China and South Korea. The alliance's top commander in Europe will now step up coordination, providing transport and better matching of surplus resources with requests. But the NATO's Secretary General, Jens Stoltenberg, was at pains to stress that the alliance's traditional business was still being done.
Jonathan Marcus. The sale of fake coronavirus masks and testing kits is currently being tackled in a number of countries. In the UK, a faith healer in London has been caught selling what he claimed were plague protection kits for more than $100. The head of the Kingdom Church in Camberwell, Bishop Climate Wiseman, said he believed the small bottle of oil and piece of red yarn offered his followers protection against the virus. Andy Verity has been investigating.
In a blog post, Bishop Climate Wiseman tells followers they can be saved by faith from coronavirus by anointing themselves with divine protection oil. He has urged them to order kits for £91 each, an allusion to Psalm 91, which says, "You will not fear the pestilence that stalks in darkness, nor the plague that destroys by day." After a complaint and an intervention from Trading Standards, the faith healer stopped advertising the kits of oil, red yarn and cedarwood as plague protection kits, instead calling them spiritual divine cleansing kits. But he's been telling followers on YouTube they will protect against any plague, including the new coronavirus.
Make sure you anoint yourself, especially, you know, with a special protection oil. This is a special oil, child of God, that is able to protect God's people right now from every manner of plague.
Bishop Climate told the BBC he'd sold 1,000 of the kits. He said he wasn't telling people to ignore the government's advice and that he wasn't making money from the oil, in spite of the price. He admitted there was no scientific basis to say the oil would be effective against COVID-19. I asked him how he could then claim it might help his followers.
I am not misleading anybody. All what I'm doing here is, it is there that God has always protected his people from plague. It is there in the Bible. I'm a prophet, I'm a spiritual man.
The Charity Commission is now investigating, saying it was looking into the alleged sale of false COVID-19 protection devices as a matter of urgency. As a Christian, Bishop Climate said, he genuinely believed the oil he was selling would help protect against coronavirus.
That was Andy Verity. Still to come in this podcast.
As we look at what the medical community and more broadly first responders are doing, pretty humbling to see. So if this made a small difference, that's a good thing.
The private companies all over the world coming up with novel ideas to support health workers. Now, when the city of Wuhan went into lockdown, Yuli Yang began a campaign to send messages of support to friends and relatives back home in China. Now, as restrictions are lifted across China, she's sending messages of encouragement the other way, from the people of Wuhan to a fearful world. She told my colleague Pascal Harter more.
So obviously in late January, when Wuhan went into lockdown, we really saw an emerging trend of hate and discrimination against people from Wuhan by people from the rest of China or people who simply look Chinese. That really made me sad and worried because all my family members and friends were back home in Wuhan. They were all under lockdown. They had to deal with real survival challenges. And at the same time, inevitably, they would also come across stories on their phones letting them know that the rest of the world hates you now.
How did Go Wuhan work and how did you make sure that you were getting positive messages to them?
At the beginning of this lockdown, I wanted to share a few of my very favorite things about Wuhan. So I wrote a post on Facebook telling people about all the fun and cool things about Wuhan. And to my surprise, I really received so many loving and compassionate messages. So I wanted to use that momentum and call for more people to use hashtag Go Wuhan to share these love and compassionate messages. And then I had a group of volunteers and friends to basically one by one translate these messages from mostly English into Chinese and post them on Weibo, which is the Chinese equivalent of Twitter.
And then as Wuhan started to emerge from its lockdown, other parts of the world started to go into their stay-at-home restrictions. You've reversed the flow of the messages.
Yeah, I just thought that it is time for Wuhan to start to share its own tips and messages of support to the world under the hashtag Go Wuhan, Go World, with pictures and messages from the real people in Wuhan. What I do believe is that it has a psychological impact when you know that you are not fighting this virus alone. You are perhaps just a little bit stronger emotionally. And by being a little bit stronger emotionally, and I believe that your immune system would be boosted, even if just by a tiny bit.
That was Yuli Yang speaking to Pascal Harter. There was already a worldwide shortage of around 6 million nurses before the COVID-19 pandemic started. Now, the International Council of Nurses, which represents 20 million nurses around the world, has told the BBC their members are facing unprecedented physical and psychological challenges. The BBC's global health correspondent, Tulip Mazunda, reports. All over the world, healthcare workers are putting their lives at risk to protect ours. China was the first country to face the full force of COVID-19. South Korea followed soon after. Health workers have been sending us videos from their clinics from all over the world. Sung Hoon Oh is a nurse working in Gyeongsangbuk-do in South Korea.
When caring for patients, we must wear full body protection. Two layers of overshoes, gloves, masks and goggles. In 5 minutes, the whole body is drenched in sweat. It becomes hard to care for patients.
The US is the latest country to be hit hard by this pandemic, with more cases now than anywhere else in the world. And Europe has been at the epicentre of this outbreak for more than 2 weeks now. Agustín Vázquez Valencia is a nurse working in Spain's capital, Madrid.
We're at war with a totally invisible enemy. We are fighting for everyone and trying not to get hurt ourselves. We feel like we are the spearhead in this battle.
In the northern Italian city of Bergamo, health workers are utterly overwhelmed.
We are physically exhausted.
Serena Viotto is working in a hospital there and says one of the hardest parts of her job is speaking to desperate families who are unable to see their loved ones.
Our efforts are not rewarded with a positive outcome sometimes. Another issue is the interaction with the family member. The contact is mediated by phone and often we receive calls asking for updates. They never can see their relatives and exert to express with words how much pain and suffering we can perceive throughout the voices on the other side of the phone.
All this as the world faces a chronic shortage of crucial personal protective equipment for health workers. The World Health Organization says globally the response requires around 89 million medical masks and 76 million gloves each month. Howard Catton from the International Council of Nurses says healthcare workers need to be much better supported.
As always, nurses are stepping up, they're saving lives, but they're putting themselves, often sacrificing themselves ahead of other people. That is not possible to continue in the long term. And if we don't properly look after our health workforce, after our nurses, if we exhaust them, my fear is that this will make the virus worse.
There is no global tally of the number of infected healthcare workers. In China, the government says more than 3,000 have been infected and at least 22 medics have died. Spanish officials say around 13% of all those infected in the country are healthcare workers. In Italy, it's around 9% of all those infected. That was Tulip Mazunda. The problem for healthcare systems around the world isn't just the number of people getting sick. It's the fact that they're all getting sick around the same time. In many countries, there simply isn't enough hospital capacity to cope. So officials are turning to exhibition centres, hotels, and in one case, a giant football stadium to help meet demand. Here's Jonathan Savage.
A football fan, more so a Brazilian football fan, would associate the Maracanã with life. Joy, tears, passion, a cacophony of life. Over the years, it has seemingly overflowed with life. The day it opened, almost 200,000 people were there. And now it will function to preserve life. Perhaps not the famous bowl of the stadium itself, but in its immediate environs will spring up a temporary 400-bed hospital. With global sport at a standstill, this kind of venue is becoming more and more important. The Excel Centre in London, which hosted sports including wrestling in the 2012 Olympics, has been repurposed to take down COVID-19. They're calling the venue NHS Nightingale, and it opens this week. Its clinical director, Professor Ben O'Brien, says senior doctors are aware of what may lie ahead.
those staff would be quite used to the realities of dealing with this disease and these types of patients, including the sad fact that not everybody will survive. Those staff that might have stepped up to help, they are genuine heroes, and we really need to look after them to make sure that they can cope with the realities of working in an intensive care unit.
In struggling New York, the US Tennis Open's Billie Jean King Stadium is also being turned into a temporary medical facility. The former Liverpool manager Bill Shankly famously said that football isn't a matter of life and death. It is, he asserted, more important than that. Bill Shankly was wrong.
That was Jonathan Savage. Now, before COVID-19 took hold, there had been warnings about such a pandemic for years. A clip of the co-founder of Microsoft, Bill Gates, warning of the consequences of one in 2015 has been shared widely online, with some calling him the Nostradamus of disease. Others, however, say the model he was referring to was not the same as COVID-19. In an interview with CBS, Mr. Gates says authorities in the US should have acted earlier.
Well, the economy is being hurt. It's great the Congress has acted. We probably will need to do more there. You know, I thought we would respond a bit faster. What we're doing, how we're having to change the economy here in order to drop the number of cases, it's really unprecedented. Even the issue of once you get the case numbers down, what does opening up look like? You know, which activities, like schools, have such benefit and can be done in a way that the risk of transmission is very low, and which activities like mass gatherings may be, in a certain sense, more optional. And so until you're widely vaccinated, those may not come back at all.
Bill Gates. The former international footballer Gary Lineker has criticised clubs in the English Premier League who've chosen to use a government scheme to help pay staff wages before asking their star players to take a pay cut. Clubs elsewhere around the world have already agreed to waive or defer salaries during the coronavirus outbreak. Nigel Adderley has more details.
The English Premier League is the richest in the football world, with a global audience contributing to television deals which run into billions of dollars. But since the COVID-19 outbreak, stadia have been closed and cameras switched off. And a debate has erupted about how the sport's finances are managed. Many top players earn millions of dollars a year, but a number of clubs have chosen to save money by paying their support staff with government funding before considering wage cuts for their highest earners. Tottenham are one of the clubs utilising government funds, and their former player Gary Lineker isn't impressed.
The way Tottenham have handled it, I don't think has been very good. And what Tottenham are doing to their staff, I don't agree with whatsoever. It's very disappointing that they're not supporting their staff when obviously football is awash with money generally. But this will affect football massively economically as well.
One of the world's best players, Argentina's Lionel Messi, has taken a 70% pay cut along with his Barcelona teammates, while German giants Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund are among many clubs to cut players' wages and use the funds to help out smaller teams. Back in the UK, some Premier League players have acted to help local communities, and Lineker is confident they would also take a wage drop.
They're young men, very young men, a lot of teenagers, early 20s. Many of them will need a little bit of guidance. They probably don't quite know what the right thing is to do. Hopefully, sense will prevail and footballers do their bit, because if they don't, they won't come out of this very well. I do think football will and should do something.
Talks between the leagues and the players' trade union broke up without agreement on Wednesday. There is pressure on all parties to keep talking.
Nigel Adderley. And now for some good news. When conventional supply chains aren't delivering vital equipment in time or in sufficient volume, stuff like face masks, ventilators, disposable aprons, the private sector is stepping in. We've got two stories for you. The first comes from the world of Major League Baseball in the United States, where the new season is on hold. Michael Rubin heads a Pennsylvania-based company called Fanatics, which makes kit for professional players and replica gear for fans. Now they're making supplies for American hospital workers.
We use the same fabric that we make a baseball uniform from, because that's the fabric that we had available. These are non-surgical masks. They're made to use one time only. In the place where many hospitals are, you know, everywhere in the world today, just don't have supplies of anything. This was a quick way to get something that was a good step forward. So it's not the N95 mask, which is what I think ideally everyone would love to have, but it's a mask that provides significant protection and one that could be a great substitute until they can get the N95 mask. You know, I came up with the idea about 2 weeks ago in the middle of the night. And once I asked my guys to start working on this, a few days later, St. Luke's Hospital in Pennsylvania came to us and said, hey, we need masks. And they worked together to design a mask that met their needs. So, yes, we've done this in consultation with both the state and with St. Luke's Hospital. We started making these last Tuesday, and we were already shipping them by Wednesday or Thursday. So these are already in hospitals in Pennsylvania.
Next up, New Zealand-born Tim Brown. He heads Allbirds, a global shoe brand based in California. He's come up with a buy one, donate one scheme to deliver free sneakers to healthcare workers.
We have a small team on the ground in China, and the genesis of this idea is actually one of our customers there started buying them for workers on the front line in Wuhan. And it started with a donation of $500,000 of shoes here in the States, and we came up with the idea of extending it by asking our community to purchase the shoes basically at cost to extend the donation to the community, and there was just overwhelming support from it. So it's been nice to see. You know, as we look at what the medical community and more broadly first responders are doing, it's pretty humbling to see. So if this made a small difference, that's a good thing. The total value of shoes that will be sent out to the medical community in America and in the UK for the NHS and in Germany is now north of $1 million.
You heard that from Tim Brown and Michael Rubin. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Charlotte Gallagher. Until next time, goodbye.